Just a minute. I'm coming.
FBI, open up!
Just a minute.
Hello, everybody. This is Legal Man. Welcome to the show. This is going to be a good episode. I'm going to start a new essay by Lysander Spooner, The Unconstitutionality of Slavery. And I know that sounds ridiculous because slavery was made unconstitutional by the 13th Amendment, but I'm not going to do the whole essay. And the essay has just a phenomenal amount of great stuff in it that has nothing to do with slavery, but will teach anybody who listens to the series a tremendous amount about the law. And for people who don't know me, I'm a lawyer. I've practiced for more than 30 years. I'm America's most trusted and beloved lawyer because I tell people the truth. And the truth is, I was a constitutional conservative for years and years and years and years and believed all the stupid crap about the fantasticness of the Constitution, the liberty and my freedom machine and the amendments and the Supreme Court and all the shit. Just go down a list of all the stupidity I believed. And then about 25 years ago, I got the internet. And in fairly short order, I started figuring out it's all crap. And it was a grift to keep me on a tax-paying plantation. And when I figured all that out, I became self-certified as a master practitioner because I don't need constitutional conservatives anymore. I've also given myself a lifetime achievement award for the hundreds and hundreds of shows I've done explaining the way the system actually works. And when Jones Plantation, the movie, came out, I play Mr. Jones, I was so impressed with the job I did that I gave myself the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest award that any civilian can get. And I awarded that to myself because I really thought I earned it. And I love having tons of these fake awards and credentials, and I'm probably going to give myself some more because all of this credentialing and awards, that's the control system. The state forces people to learn a bunch of bullshit and officialdom and then to regurgitate it. And if you step out of line and you fail to do it properly, then they take your license or certification or registration and they ruin you professionally. They destroy your career. And it includes everything from an electrician to someone who cuts hair all the way to lawyers and doctors. Everybody saw it during COVID. Any doctor or nurse who stepped out of line just got crushed. And so I like to mock all these credentials, and I want people to mock them themselves and give themselves fake awards and credentials and be on the lookout for this appeal to authority nonsense that's used all the time to try to push lies into the public. All right, well, enough about that. Let's go ahead and get this show going. So I am going to start Spooner's essay, The Unconstitutionality of Slavery. Now, you might think this is a pointless essay to do since slavery has been made technically unconstitutional unless you're convicted of a crime by the 13th Amendment. But people have never read this essay for the most part. Most people have never read any Spooner. The most people who've read some Spooner have read his No Treason, Constitution of No Authority, which is a fantastic essay. We just finished A Letter to Grover Cleveland, which again has a horrible title, but which was his very last essay and does an incredible job of bringing a bunch of different stuff together. And this essay, which, as I've said, most people they've never read, they never would read, they see the title, they're never going to look at it because they already know slavery's been made unconstitutional. What's the point? Well, the essay makes an incredible amount of fantastic points and flushes out a tremendous amount of ideas that are so important, so critical to understanding any kind of real legal analysis. And while I've said I'm not going to cover the entire essay, there are definitely going to be parts I will skip over because obviously slavery has been made unconstitutional by the amendment. So the original purpose of the essay is no longer valid, or as the lawyers would say, it's moot, meaning that it's no longer has any legal necessity to make the argument because the point is moot. But that does not take away from all this other stuff that's in there. And while I will skip over some of the essay, I can't know exactly which parts I will skip over. All these things are works in progress, and there are works of art when I do them. They aren't scientific legal documents because I'm not sure what I might still think is important or not important or what I might want to say or what might be happening in the sort of current events crap that I might think part of the essay really applies to and would help in analyzing. And so I'm not going to commit to what parts I will or won't do, but I will assure you that this essay is more than worth listening to when I do it. That much I will promise you. I've kind of decided I want to do this, and probably his A Defense to the Fugitive Slave Act, which he wrote in 1850. This essay here on unconstitutionality of slavery came out in 1856, 6 years after he wrote A Defense to the Fugitive Slave Act. And Spooner was obviously probably the preeminent legal thinker as far as abolitionists go. These essays were relatively popular. I'm not going to say they were super popular, but they're relatively popular. And his Defense of the Fugitive Slave Act is another essay which I probably will do a large part of. Again, for the same reasons. It makes arguments in there, flushes them out as a necessity to the actual point of the essay that are just tremendous and that really don't appear in such depth in any of the other essays. So you've got the Defense of the Fugitive Slave Act, which was designed for people to read and then be able to use to actually defend themselves or for abolitionists to use to defend others in courts against the return of the slaves. And then he wrote The Unconstitutionality of Slavery 6 years later to flush it out. These things obviously took quite a while. They came out in parts. He sold them as well. But I think that doing them in the reverse order is actually a little bit more helpful, and you will understand some of the concepts when I do the Defense of the Fugitive Slave Act essay. I think it'll make more sense because he references some stuff that he has then flushed out in this essay. But that's a lot of setup for this, but the reason I wanted to do it is that I've pretty much come to the conclusion that the likelihood of us being able to avoid what's coming is low, but that it is very important for at least some people to be able to understand the truly fundamental issues regarding the law and to hopefully, at least in their own abilities, be able to avoid the problems that are coming. You're going to have to be able to try to get on the other side of the line prior to the time they shut those doors, the electronic prison. Whether we can pull it off or not, I don't know. That's going to be up to each individual person, but I do think it's important for people to understand. And in fact, today I was interacting with some people. I'd posted a tweet about the government being basically indistinguishable from a criminal enterprise because they take whatever they care from you without your consent and they spend it however they want, including hiring these armed goons to come and arrest you or kill you if you resist. And I had some law professor joker respond to me that his tweet was something like, except in our country where the government does have the consent of the people and you get a say in how your money's spent through your vote. This joker was actually a constitutional professor who'd been published by the Hoover Institute and all this other crap. And I just thought, this is the kind of pathetic horseshit that we're up against, just like the stuff I played in the last episode that shows you the standard line. These people have no conception of these very fundamental arguments about consent and what consent really is. Any lawyer knows that consent requires it be knowing and voluntary and have all these other things. But nothing about that is involved with a vote. You're not allowed to either vote or not vote, and it doesn't change a damn thing. Somebody's going to get elected, and if I don't want them, it makes no difference. And if I vote for the opposite guy and he doesn't win, then there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. There's nothing about consent at all, because they're not bound to do anything they say or promise. So the idea that you could ever have consent with a vote like we have now with these politicians who aren't bound to do anything is preposterous. If you're going to ever have any kind of consent through a vote, you'd have to first agree that you'd live by the terms of the vote on a specific topic, knowing the people who would be voting and knowing the topic. But we don't have that because they simply force you to either vote or not vote. And if you don't vote, it doesn't change anything. You're still bound to everything they do. And if you do vote, you're not guaranteed to get anything you vote for. And in fact, you may get exactly the opposite of what you vote for. And anybody you vote for has absolutely no obligation to do anything they promise. So the entire reason for you voting for them may be, again, be moot because they don't do it. And so there's no legal recourse to any of it. No part of voting has anything to do with that. But again, this is a classic example of a guy whose entire career, his entire cocktail party life and identity is tied up in him being a constitutional scholar, a conservative, worrying about liberals and all this other stupid, crazy shit they have in their mind. And that's what we're up against. And this essay has so many great pieces about the law and how to interpret law and legal analysis. And it just does such a good job of bringing them out. It's going to have lots and lots of opportunities to discuss current events and current situations. And before I start reading the essay, I want to read some of these hilarious, what are they in effect, reviews that he calls recommendations that he would advertise with some of his other books. So when you bought one of his books, you would get, in effect, these recommendations, kind of an insert to try to sell you another one of his books. And this was some of the recommendations he had that he had published with another essay of his regarding the unconstitutionality of slavery. And I think they're so great, I'm going to read a few of them. It says, Mr. Garrison, quote, "His logic may be faultless as a merely legal effort. We admit Mr. Spooner's reasoning to be ingenious, perhaps as an effort of logic, unanswerable. It impresses us as the production of a mind equally honest and acute. Its ability and the importance of the subject on which it treats will doubtless secure for it wide circulation and careful perusal." This kind of sets it up. Here's another great one. Mr. Joshua Levitt says, "It is unanswerable. There will never be an honest attempt to answer it. Neither priest nor politician, lawyer nor judge will ever dare undertake to sunder that iron-linked chain of argument which runs straight through this book from beginning to end." How good is that, right? That's exactly what Spooner does do in the essay. It's incredible. Here's another one. Mr. N.P. Rogers, "It is a splendid essay. If the talent laid out in it were laid out in the bar, it would make the offer distinguished and rich. This essay should give the author a name at the Boston bar. It will at the bar of posterity." Wow. I mean, how prescient is that, right? I mean, how prescient is that? All right, and this is the last one I'm going to read before I start some of the essay, I think. J. Fulton Jr. from Pennsylvania says, "Now that I have read it, I feel bound to say that it is the most clear and luminous production that I have ever read on the subject. It begins without a line of preface and ends without a word of apology. It is a solid mass of the most brilliant argument, unbroken as it seems to me by a single flaw, and treads down as dust everything which has preceded it upon that subject. Let every friend of the slave read the work without delay. I believe it is destined to give a new phase to our struggle." That's so accurate, right? That's exactly what Spooner does. He just crushes to dust any possible argument. He has an absolute iron chain link argument from beginning to end. He always does. That's why he's so fabulous, and that's why nobody reads him. That's why he's so buried. Because if people understood this, you wouldn't have jokers like that loser who had contacted me and tried to tweet, "We do have consent through the vote." You wouldn't have idiots like that. You wouldn't have that foolish nonsense that I just did on PragerU. None of that would exist if people read this stuff, because nobody could be fooled by it. See, nobody could be fooled by it. And I just think it's important for people to have a fundamental grasp of why these constitutional conservatives are so wrong. They're so dead wrong because they're such a bunch of pompous asses, such a bunch of phony baloney intellectuals. They really, really do drive me crazy with their ridiculousness. So without further ado, let's go ahead and start this incredible essay and at least read a little bit so you can get a flavor for it. The Unconstitutionality of Slavery, Complete, Parts 1 through 2, Lysander Spooner, 1856. Oh man, this is going to be good. The Unconstitutionality of Slavery, Chapter 1, What is Law? Now this is fascinating, this is critical, because people genuinely believe that the law is nothing but just some stupid crap that these crooks write down. Whatever kind of arbitrary crap they write down, they think if it bounces from committee to vote, to other vote to signature that somehow it's a law. And this is because nobody is taught the difference. In law school, I certainly wasn't taught the fundamental difference, because the entire purpose of the legal industry is to support and defend the complete fraud that is this government positive statutory law nonsense, so that the government can wield all this arbitrary power over us. And the Defense of Fugitive Slave Act has a fantastic part regarding, in effect, the Second Amendment and some other items which are extremely hot topics. And they will make a lot more sense after we've read this. I think a lot of that was kind of assumed in his other essay, though I do think most people have no idea what law actually is. And you certainly wouldn't know what the law is after going to law school. That's the last thing. You'd be just totally and completely brainwashed about what the law supposedly is. But it's so fundamental, because until you understand how critical it is, you can easily be fooled. Just easily, easily be fooled. And I'm not so sure that anybody really set it out better than Spooner. And I'm not so sure that anybody really had attempted to set it out. I know Basquiat had done a bunch of stuff with the law a little earlier, but I don't think it's nearly as good as Spooner. It's not as complete, that's for sure. Not that Basquiat's wrong, but I just don't think it's as complete and it's as thorough, just like that sort of iron chain link logic from end to end. So here we go. Before examining the language of the Constitution in regard to slavery, let us obtain a view of the principles by virtue of which law arises out of those constitutions and compacts by which people agree to establish government. Such an important point that, in effect, law is in there. It's existing. It's the natural law. You can try to describe which parts of it are, in fact, going to be described in the document, therefore intended to be bound between the parties. But you can't really create it out of thin air if it runs contrary, and you're going to see why that is. And this is so different, of course, from the other understanding of the law, which is that whatever is in the Constitution, that's automatically law. That's the law. Whatever the court says, that's law. Whatever the Congress says, that's law. And the entire point of this is to try to turn people's minds on to this concept that they've been so tricked by. To do this, it is necessary to define the term law. Popular opinions are very loose and indefinite, both as the true definition of law and also as to the principle by virtue of which law results from the compacts or contracts of mankind with each other. What then is law? That law, I mean, which, and which only, judicial tribunals are morally bound under all circumstances to declare and sustain. So that's what he wants to really get to the nub of. Not just that the Constitution says something. He's asking whether or not it's truly law. So what is law? Is law anything they write down? And then he's going to go through and show you how that's definitely not what law is, couldn't be, and never was. In answering this question, I shall attempt to show that law is an intelligible principle of right, necessarily resulting from the nature of man and not an arbitrary rule that can be established by mere will, numbers, or power. Just think about how truly significant that change is if people understood this. If he proves this point, which he of course does because it's Spooner, but just think how fundamentally that changes the nature of the concept of law from just some stupid shit Charlie Schumer did or Joe Biden suggested, to this thing, this intelligible principle and right. Let's continue. To determine whether this proposition be correct, we must look at the general signification of the term law. The true and general meaning of it is that natural, permanent, unalterable principle which governs any particular thing or class of things. That's a pretty good description, right? That really is a pretty damn good definition of it. And if you hear some cats mewing or running around, they get very excited when I do Spooner. So I apologize for that. I can't catch every one of them. The principle is strictly a natural one, and the term applies to every natural principle, whether mental, moral, or physical. Thus, we speak of the laws of mind, meaning thereby those natural, universal, and necessary principles according to which mind acts or by which it is governed. That's true. Obviously, a good definition there. We speak, too, of the moral law, which is merely a universal principle of moral obligation that arises out of the nature of men and their relations to each other and to other things, and is consequently as unalterable as the nature of men. And it is solely because it is unalterable in its nature and universal in its application that it is denominated law. This is a hugely important point, that it's unalterable and that it's universal in its application. If you don't have that, you don't have a law. You just have some made-up shit, some arbitrary shit that changes and doesn't apply, and it's just nonsense. If it were changeable, partial, or arbitrary, it would be no law. Thus, we speak of physical laws, of the laws, for instance, that govern the solar system, of the laws of motion, the laws of gravitation, the laws of light, also the laws that govern the vegetable and animal kingdoms in all their various departments, among which laws may be named, for example, the one that like produces like. Of course, that doesn't apply anymore because now we have trans and men can be women and men can have babies. So that somehow has upended that. But he's right. Okay. This is, again, there are laws of physics. There are laws of chemistry. There are laws out in nature, optics, all sorts of things have laws that can be observed, and they're universal and they're unalterable. And that's why they are a law. And he's making the argument that a law, just like in nature, a law, a natural law, when it comes to legal implications, is unalterable and universal. And again, we cover some of this in his natural law, but this is just a very excellent way he hits it again and uses it. Continue. Unless the operation of this principle were uniform, universal, and necessary, it would be no law. I don't know how you can argue with that. Already you can see how he's going to destroy the idea of statutory law or even the Holy Constitution being a so-called law. Law, then, applied to any object or thing whatsoever, signifies a natural, unalterable, universal principle governing such object or thing. Any rule not existing in the nature of things or that is not permanent, universal, and inflexible in its application is no law, according to any correct definition of the term law. I don't know how you can argue with it. Once again, you've got the blockchain of logic. What then is that natural, universal, impartial, and inflexible principle which, under all circumstances, necessarily fixes, determines, defines, and governs the civil rights of men? That's a very important question. And the answer I was given in law school was complete garbage. And it's the same kind of answer that he shows in here and then blows apart. This issue was never really discussed in law school, even though it's incredibly foundational. And as soon as you get the foundation wrong, you're off and running into the screwed situation we have. And that's exactly why they make sure they have buried it in absolutely in the beginning to make sure that everybody is always arguing about the wrong shit. And jokers like that law professor with a Hoover Institute publication has no fucking clue what he's talking about. Let's continue. Those rights of person, property, etc., which one human being has as against other human beings, I shall define it to be simply the rule, principle, obligation, or requirement of natural justice. See, law is concerned with justice. It doesn't matter what other parts of it you're in, civil, criminal, it doesn't matter. It's about justice. It's about the ability of one person to make sure that they're not getting screwed over by somebody else and or that their stuff they have is being protected. That's what it's ultimately about. That's why I always say, it doesn't matter what these courts have said. Oh, this can come in, that can't come in, and I'm sorry, it's a tough case and all this other shit. None of that matters. The purpose of a court is to do justice. If it's not there to do justice, then it's just a complete sham. It's just a total sham. And everybody knows what justice is. Now, people may disagree because they have bias and prejudice or have a disagreement about what the facts underlying are. But when you have agreement about the facts, you're just going to get agreement about what justice is the vast majority of the time. You just are. Let's continue. This rule, principle, obligation, or requirement of natural justice has its origin in the natural rights of individuals, results necessarily from them, keeps them ever in view as its end and purpose, secures their enjoyment, and forbids their violation. How could anybody argue with that? I mean, that's exactly what you want the law to do. It's the exact opposite of what our law does, because our law, so-called, is designed to turn all this stuff on its head so that the few who control the government and the power structure can do whatever the hell they want and get away with it and keep all the masses underfoot. Hi, it's Legal Man. I hope you're enjoying the show. If you appreciate the unique insight and information I provide, then go over to my Patreon account for The Quash and become a member. I have bonus shows and material, early access, and it's a good place to meet like-minded people. I have people ask me all the time, what can we do, Legal Man? Well, start by voting with your pocketbook. It's the only vote that really counts. Support things that tell people the truth. Getting people to understand the truth is the only solution we have to this insanity. Look, I get it. There are a lot of people who can't afford to support my show with money. But there are a lot of people who can. And if you can and you like the show, you should support it. That's what free markets look like. The people running this scam, they have unlimited funding. I don't have support of that system. In fact, I get harassed because I tell people the truth that they don't want the people to know. So we have to stick together. So go sign up. Now let's get back to the show. Because our law, so-called, is designed to turn all this stuff on its head so that the few who control the government and the power structure can do whatever the hell they want and get away with it and keep all the masses underfoot. And just steal shit. That's what they do. Law and order. Just following orders. It also secures all those acquisitions of property, privilege, and claim which men have a natural right to make by labor and contract. Well, we went through all that stuff with his letter to Grover Cleveland about the ability to contract and how important it is. And anybody who really understood it sees that the vast majority of all these made-up government laws, they're just a violation of the fact that the federal government and no government's allowed to make laws that disturb the natural contracts obligations of them. And of course, that's all just been ignored. Let's continue. Such is the true meaning of the term law as applied to the civil rights of men. And I doubt if any other definition of law can be given that will prove correct in every or necessarily in any possible case. The very idea of law originates in men's natural rights. There is no other standard than natural rights by which civil law can be measured. This is such an important point. People can't seem to understand that unless you already have a concept of justice in your mind, there's absolutely no way to create an idea of injustice or justice with regards to whatever the situation is. It doesn't matter what the law says. How would you know that the law is unjust unless you already have in your mind a built-in concept of what justice is? You wouldn't. How would you ever have any concept of the way this outcome is just? You wouldn't. It's all built in. It's all built in, just like all sorts of other things. It's built into us. It's part of the human condition. Let's continue. Law has always been the name of that rule or principle of justice which protects those rights. Thus, we speak of natural law. Natural law, in fact, constitutes the great body of the law that is professedly administered by judicial tribunals. And it always necessarily must be, for it is impossible to anticipate a thousandth part of the cases that arise so as to enact a special law for them. Nobody knows all the different ways that the scenarios can come up. You can't. You have to have a concept in your mind. The law is a general concept. And then you simply apply it to all these different innumerable, really infinite variety of facts. And you can still come to an answer. That's the whole thing. It's just like the ability to reason. You can't learn how to reason. It's already in there. It's true that you can perfect it. You can improve it with learning skills. But even then, you wouldn't be able to learn the skill or understand how to apply them if you didn't already have it built into your system. It's just not possible. Let's continue. Wherever the cases have not been thus anticipated, the natural law prevails. We thus politically and judicially recognize the principle of law as originating in the nature of rights of men. By recognizing it as originating in the nature of the men, we recognize it as a principle that is necessarily as immutable and as indestructible as the nature of man. We also, in the same way, recognize the impartiality and universality of its application. That's a great argument. The very fact that the courts use it all the time is clear proof that it is something that's recognized, and it is legitimate, and it is foundational. If, then, law be a natural principle, one necessarily resulting from the very nature of man, and capable of being destroyed or changed only by destroying or changing the nature of man, it necessarily follows that it must be of a higher and more inflexible obligation than any other rule of conduct, which the arbitrary will of any man or combination of men may attempt to establish. This is another great point in building his case, which is that, look, this stuff already exists. It's unalterable. It's there. You can't possibly override it with some arbitrary horseshit somebody dreamed up for their own pleasure. It doesn't work. Continue. Certainly no rule can be of such high, universal, and inflexible obligation as that which, if observed, secures the rights, the safety, and liberty of all. He's just saying this is a natural part of human condition. And if people understood this, then they wouldn't be fooled. Let's read a little more. Natural law, then, is the paramount law. And being the paramount law, it is necessarily the only law for being applicable to every possible case that can arise touching the rights of men. Any other principle or rule that should arbitrarily be applied to those rights would necessarily conflict with it. This is a devastating argument that, look, natural law exists. And since natural law exists, this made-up statutory positive law is below it. It's below it. And since it's below it and it conflicts with it, and the other is higher, it has to be ignored. It's not significantly different than saying the Constitution says one thing and the statute says something else. What the statute so-called conflicts with the Constitution, the statute's not constitutional because the Constitution trumps it. And his argument here is simply that natural law trumps the Constitution as well as any other made-up law, because the Constitution is just another made-up law, so-called. And it's just an absolutely devastating argument. Let's continue. And as a merely arbitrary, partial, and temporary rule must, of necessity, be of less obligation than a natural, permanent, equal, and universal one, the arbitrary one becomes, in reality, of no obligation at all when the two come in collision. Right? That's it. See? This is the Constitution's one, the statute's another. There's federal law and there's state law. The ultimate law is natural law. That's what it is. And it doesn't matter what else you have. It's a lower obligation because it's a poorer form of law. One is universal and constantly applicable, and the other one is just some shit somebody wrote down. Consequently, there is and can be, correctly speaking, no law but natural law. There is no other principle or rule applicable to the rights of men that is obligatory in comparison with this in any case whatsoever. How can you argue with it? If the made-up law conflicts with natural law, it doesn't work because the entire purpose of law is justice. That's what we're talking about. And if you're just going to simply enshrine injustice and call it law, well, you've just turned everything on its head. And of course, that's exactly what the Ferengis have done. And this natural law is no other than that rule of natural justice, which results either directly from men's natural rights or from such acquisitions as they have a natural right to make, or from such contracts as they have a natural right to enter into. It's just so devastating, like the guys in the recommendation said. Natural law recognizes the validity of all contracts which men have a natural right to make and which justice requires to be fulfilled. Such, for example, as contracts that render equivalent for equivalent, and are at the same time consistent with morality, the natural rights of men, and those rights of property, privilege, etc., which men have a natural right to acquire by labor and contract. Right. This is why all these drug laws are just made up bullshit. I can buy drugs if I want to. Someone can sell me drugs. You have to get registered, buy prescription drugs. No, it's all made up. Natural law, therefore, inasmuch as it recognizes the natural right of men to enter into obligatory contracts, permits the formation of government founded on contract, as all our governments profess to be. Right. So now he's going to say, look, you've got this natural law. It's the most important. It's the most foundational. Nothing that conflicts with it can ever override it. And it's through this natural obligation of contracts and the ability of men to agree to things that governments are supposedly formed. That's what they're based upon. The people consent and all that stupid shit that professor imagines. This is where he's going to be so devastating. But in order that the contract of government may be valid and lawful, it must purport to authorize nothing inconsistent with natural justice and men's natural rights. It cannot lawfully authorize government to destroy or take from men their natural rights, for natural rights are inalienable and can be no more surrendered to government, which is but an association of individuals, than to a single individual. And of course, we touched on this in his letter to Grover Cleveland, which is you don't have the ability to delegate the authority to government to violate natural law because there is no such authority. It doesn't exist, so you can't delegate it. And so you can't legally, lawfully create a government which has any possible authority to do any of this stuff that violates men's natural rights. You just don't. And of course, this is the fundamental issue that's missed by the con-cons, because all they do is read the Constitution and what the Supreme Court said about it, and then just imagine anything that's in there was something they can do. This is so fundamental. Continue. They are a necessary attribute of man's nature, and he can no more part with them to government or anyone else than with his nature itself. This is such a great point, right? The natural law is something that's built into you. That's why it's inalienable. I can't give you my sense of humor or lack thereof if you don't have the same one. I can't. It's not possible. I can't have you experience what I experience. It's just not possible. And I can't give away my natural rights. It's not possible. But the contract of government may lawfully authorize the adoption of means not inconsistent with natural justice for the better protection of men's natural rights. And this is the legitimate and true object of government. How many people know that? Con-cons constantly talk around this shit, but then they just absolutely contradict it in a thousand ways. They're complete hypocrites. Their shit makes no sense at all. It's not a chain link, absolute ironclad from beginning to end like Spooner. They talk about natural rights and Rousseau, all this shit. And then they just dream all this shit up that the government can just take whatever it wants from you, spend it however it wants, and suppose you get your vote. That's your consent. It's just all utter shit, people. All right, let's finish this up. And rules and statutes not inconsistent with natural justice and men's natural rights, if enacted by such government, are binding on the ground of contract upon those who are parties to the contract, which creates the government and authorizes it to pass rules and statutes to carry out its objects. Just think about that construction of a government and the Constitution. And if the Constitution was interpreted through that lens right there, if that's all it did was interpret through that lens right there, how different things would be. That so long as the government is attempting to pass laws that are simply there to procedurally and efficiently attempt to protect and defend the natural rights of the people, then fine. But literally no part of the government is doing any of that. Every single part of it today is the exact opposite. The exact opposite. All right, let's read one little bit more since I had a lot of preface on this, even though it's getting late in the show. Let's read one little bit more so we can really get into this so people can just see why I think this essay is so worth doing a large part of. But natural law tries the contract of government and declares it lawful or unlawful, obligatory or invalid by the same rules by which it tries all other contracts between man and man. What a great use of the word, it tries it. You put government up against natural law and see if government is legitimate, whether or not what this supposed government is empowered to do is in fact something that any government could ever have any legitimate authority to do by basing it against natural law. That's how government is tried. And of course, that's the part that the con-cons have simply removed. And therefore, the entire so-called authority of the government is unlimited, unhinged from anything except for anything the government itself decides to say it has and then can enforce. A contract for the establishment of government, being nothing but a voluntary contract between individuals for their mutual benefit, differs in nothing that is essential to its validity from any other contract between man and man or between nation and nation. If two individuals enter into a contract to commit trespass, theft, robbery, or murder upon a third, the contract is unlawful and void simply because it is a contract to violate natural justice or men's natural rights. And everybody can see that, right? Everybody can see that. That's not enforceable. You can't go into a court and say, oh, we had an agreement to go rob that person, murder that person. That's not enforceable. It's a crime. It's a violation of natural rights. It's absurd. It's not an obligatory contract. It doesn't form any obligation. Now, he's going to show you how the governments created also don't do it either. If two nations enter into a treaty that they will unite in plundering, enslaving, and destroying a third, the treaty is unlawful, void, and of no obligation simply because it is contrary to justice and to men's natural rights. Of course, if it's for our bestest best ally, then of course there's an exception. But he's just saying in general here, which he's taking it from the smallest, a contract between two men that's not valid and enforceable, has no obligation, to the largest, a contract so-called between two nations where they reach a treaty of some sort. On the same principle, if the majority, however large, of the people of a country enter into a contract of government called a constitution, by which they agree to aid, abet, or accomplish any kind of injustice or to destroy or invade the natural rights of any person or persons whatsoever, whether such persons be parties to the compact or not, this contract of government is unlawful and void. And for the same reason that a treaty between two nations for similar purpose or a contract of the same nature between two individuals is unlawful and void. How devastating is that right there? You can already see how his argument that slavery is unconstitutional and it has absolutely no obligation is going to be airtight. And he goes on and does so much more with it, but you can already see where it's going. You can see. He's set it up. It's absolutely impossible to break through this Spooner logic that you can't set a government up to do it. It's a violation. It's void. It doesn't have any effect. Such a contract of government has no moral sanction. It confers no rightful authority upon those appointed to administer. It confers no legal or moral rights and imposes no legal or moral obligation upon the people who are parties to it. The only duties which anyone can owe to it or to the government established under color of its authority are disobedience, resistance, and destruction. I love Spooner. I'm going to stop there. It keeps going on, but you can see where it's setting it up, right? I mean, he set it up so perfectly. He tells you what law is, and that's just absolutely unarguable. And then he just shows you that these constitutions, if it's in violation of this, if it's an attempt to, if it's parts of it in there, it's no obligation of law. And it's not law. It's not law. And that the problem is this confusion of law. And he goes and does a lot more with it and explains it and flushes it out. But you can see where he's going and you can see how important it is. And you can see how if people understood this very fundamental concept and hadn't been confused, as he shows you a little bit later, about what law is and what the judges say and all sorts of crap, if they weren't all confused by that, if you had a population understood this stuff, you could do all sorts of things. The actual procedural mechanism of governing would not be that important. You could have a just government under a monarchy. You could have a just government under some kind of phony baloney election system. It really wouldn't matter. The problems come with the fact that the people don't understand the basics. And the lawyers are totally confused and they lie to people endlessly all the time. And I do consider that to be lying when somebody is professedly an expert and they're simply dead wrong and they're misleading people and they're doing it in effect to benefit the power class, the state itself. I don't know what you can call that except for a useful dupe or knave. And if you're that incompetent, then you need to shut the hell up. The problem I have is that I've told tons and tons and tons of these so-called experts this stuff. They refuse to listen. They don't open their mind to it. They don't. That's why they're bad actors to me. Because it's not that they haven't been told. It's that they refuse to hear. Why? Because their entire life, their entire career, their entire identity is tied up in being this. And if they admitted they'd been dead wrong for so long, they'd be ruined professionally. So they're not willing to do it. So they continue on pushing lies and bullshit on people. And they are the worst, in my opinion, because those are the people we need. Those are the people we need. We need some people who are so-called recognized or willing to stand up, but none of them are. None of them are. And so I make these series and I make this podcast and a few thousand people hear it and that's it. And that's the way it is. And you're going to have to be satisfied that there's value in understanding the truth, even if it's strictly just a sort of spiritual value. But trust me, there's practical value in understanding the way the system works and understanding these differences and being able to apply and then to look around inside the system and figure out how you might be able to defend yourself against it and build yourself a little tiny protection because the shit's coming. I mean, it's coming really fast. So, okay, that's where I'm going to end it today. I hope you guys enjoy that. I hope you enjoy the essay as we move forward. Sorry it took a lot of preface to get to it, but I think it was important to set it up because, like I said, I'm not going to do the entire essay, and it's such a strange essay. I wanted people to understand why I wanted to do it. And so, if you want to, you can follow me. I'm LegalMan at US Crime Review on Twitter. And thank you to the people in Patreon who make it worth my time to make this. I hope these shows are of value to you. I do my best to make them of value to you. I know the material is very unique. I know there aren't other people out there doing it, and I appreciate the fact that you guys are willing to kick some skin in the game to make it worthwhile to make these for, really for posterity, in addition to just you guys. And Andrew and I are going to do a project that I think we'll be releasing a video on Indiegogo here shortly regarding Barnum statements, and I hope people get behind that project. We'll find out if they don't want to do it, then that's fine. Then we won't do the project. But we have to raise some money to make it worth time to do it. That's just the reality. And I'm just not going to devote my life to doing shit for free. I'm just not going to do it. And I already do a huge amount of stuff. And Andrew works hard too. And so hopefully people will enjoy that project. I know if we get to do the project that it's going to be a great project. It really is. And I hope people get behind that. And you can still go get the Jones Plantation. It's coming out on Amazon probably. We're hoping it gets approved here in the next week or two. They have to review it, and God knows what that means. But as soon as it's available, I will let people know. Inside Patreon, I'll make a special announcement. And, of course, I'll update you on the show as well. But in the meantime, you can go to JonesPlantationFilm.com and get the movie, get all the paraphernalia, get the different stuff like the cups and the hats and the t-shirts and things like that. Support the film, buy a gift certificate, show people. It's a great movie. It's a great way to spread the word with baby steps. I play Mr. Jones, kind of a drunk dick plantation owner. It's a really good movie. It's a great way to sort of introduce people to the fraud of the system. So thank you to anybody who supports that project. And beyond that, I don't think I have anything else to say, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. You guys have been a great audience as usual. Everybody have a nice night or day wherever you are. Take care.
Thank you, everybody. Let's put your hands together one more time for Legal Man. Great show.